You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. We have a treat. We have a panel episode. I'm joined with a couple of Agile Velocity Enterprise coaches, Richard Dahlman and Mark Story, and then three folks from the Discord server of Agile Uprising. We'll introduce the topic in a moment, but I want to meet and greet all the guests in my customary alphabetical by first name order. Say hello. Where are you? Give us a little background.
Oh, that's me. I still know my alphabet, and I'm Claudia Orozco Gomez, and I am an Agile coach based in Toulouse, France.
Welcome.
I'll hand it over to...
I think it's me. I'm Mark Story, coach with Agile Velocity, and I am in Littleton, Colorado.
You gotten snow yet, Mark?
There were some little tiny flakes on the deck yesterday morning, but that is all.
That make me next? I don't know. I can go. So I'm Jonathan Schneider. I actually just started a new job this week, but I am a director of transformation over at a fintech company in Charlotte, North Carolina. So,
welcome.
Very fancy.
Hi, I'm Mike Cadell. I live in the Atlanta metro area. Go by various titles and names, Agile Coach, whatever. I think of myself just as somebody who likes to ask questions and help people.
Sweet.
Hi, I'm Richard Dahlman. I'm an Enterprise Agility Coach with Agile Velocity as well. I live just a bit south of Mark in Sedalia, Colorado. So it's a beautiful day here in Colorado, and I love nothing more than having these conversations with Andy and others for the Agile Uprising podcast.
So the seed that started this was an idea that, Richard, you put into our backlog. Write a blog post about transformations, pros and cons of centralized versus decentralized. We put it out to the Discord server, who's interested, and lots of hands came up, and those folks are here, and we'll introduce our user story and some acceptance criteria. It may turn out to be actually an epic based on the size of it. But here's a challenge. Can we talk about the topic without using the big A and the big T word? Can we talk about agile transformations without actually calling them agile transformations? Because those words, what the hell do they mean anyway? Nobody knows anymore. So Richard, without much further ado, what's our current, play product owner for a moment, and we're in refinement here with the delivery team. What's the user story? What's the conversation we have?
So yeah, the user story that we started working with was something along the lines of, you know, as a technology leader, you know, I'd like to get a better understanding of how best my organization can start to build agility into the way that we're doing so that we can be more informed about our decision-making and know how to get there based on where we are now, like from here. And in fact, the idea of the title of pros and cons of centralized or decentralized transformations was one that got floated about and has created a bit of dissonance in my own mind and how I want to think about that and how I want to address that question.
What were some of the initial acceptance criteria that you came up with?
So, you know, this first question is, you know, this definition of centralized or decentralized, right? And how do we really define it? And is there, in fact, a clear approach from, you know, one perspective or the other? The second aspect we talked about was, well, if we took a pros and cons view, would that give us clarity of, you know, how we can see both sides of the question, right? So we wanted to be able to see pros and cons of each, you know, each perspective. Centralizing, there's some good and bad, decentralizing as well. And then, you know, if we started in one approach, let's say if we started off being decentralized, how do you then kind of make the decision of where to centralize or vice versa? Yeah, those are some of the acceptance criteria that we started kicking around.
So conversation time, panelists. How's that initial story? Can we clarify it, refine it?
Do we have a clear understanding of what we mean by saying centralized and decentralized? Mm-hmm. So I guess that's where I would start.
So let's make that one theme. So let's take this epic and break it into some features or stories. And one would be, how do we define centralized versus decentralized?
I'd actually like to take a step back. And Richard, you talked about how can we get agility built into the way we do things. If we keep in mind with the challenge we had earlier, what were we meaning by agility?
Yeah. For me, I'd like to hear others' views. So Andy teased up, can we avoid big A agile and can we avoid transformation? Or, you know, is that too loaded a word? So part of it is stating it in a way for me that kind of avoids the word of transformation particularly, but still, you know, evokes the idea of what we typically think of as a transformation.
So, I mean, I'll take a stab here just to stir the pot, but I mean, I always like to use the words while avoiding our, with our boundaries here, like enabling a company or organization in order to reduce friction. So that's how I kind of like to replace the T word in a way. Most people seem to align with that, but then it doesn't fully answer Claudia's question, right? It's still going to ask more details of, well, what friction and what enablement and what are, then are you measuring enablement? So I know that's where you're going with it, Claudia, probably so.
Yeah, I was going to, I think Mike might go there if I don't, but what kind of agility?
Well, and I think that actually makes our persona as a technology leader start to expand, right? I mean, there's different types of tech leaders. There's different types of people that how they view that. So, I mean, we're all already expanding on personas, I guess, because it's going to mean different things for different leaders.
Well, if you're talking about leaders, we're saying here, this is a technology leader.
Mm-hmm.
So we're focusing in.
So we got security, we have engineering, we have, you know, like there's a lot of technology leaders, right? Some have high turnover, some have retention, some have technical issues, some have people issues. It's like, so.
Yeah.
As I was listening to the description, some the thought kind of stuck in my mind is the opening words as a technology leader. I'm wondering if technology leader is the right lens to look at it from, or would we get more benefit by looking at this from the organization as a whole, the organization as a whole, not just the technology part.
Yeah, I think I would look at it like that. And John, to your position in fintech, what's the difference between a product and a technology leader? Because your product is by definition technology. So
that is correct.
Yeah.
Okay. So beginning to redraft it as a leader in my organization. Mm-hmm. I'd like to understand how best, well, organization, as a leader, I'd like to understand how best my organization can change the way we do things. Get rid of the, we're going to do the agile, or we're going to do the safe or the scrum. We just want to do things differently.
I'm going to give intent here and say, would we want to say as a people leader specifically? Because leaders come in all forms and fashions that also don't lead. Some leaders are just really good technical people, right? And don't lead people. So I think in this context for what we're trying to target, it's people leaders, right?
That would make sense if we're saying it's the way that people work together to get things done.
But it's not always people. That's why I was counteracting myself immediately when I said it.
I'm kind of on the business leader in general, because I think that's kind of that you're trying to set a direction for a business to be more effective in terms of how it does things.
Just to add some clarity to the initial intent, right? So the initial intent was not so much to worry about the type of leader, but it was an acknowledgement of if we're engaging a leader and the question is being asked, or the question might be happening inside of an organization of considering taking on this change initiative, formerly known as an agile transformation, that the, you know, who's likely to be asking that question? Who are the, who's kind of the common instigator from a leadership perspective? And part of that decision-making of the setup of that change initiative may often come with it that question of, all right, who's leading it? And does it centralize and that person's part of the organization? Or is it something that's more ubiquitous and therefore we need to think more in a more distributed sense? So that was the original thinking there. And technology leaders tend to be the most common, you know, instigators of what we do, at least. But I love the idea of looking at it at a deeper level and trying to get to the heart of what are the leaders we need to be having this conversation with?
Theme five.
Yeah, Richard, I'm kind of with you on that one, that it's because there's who does instigate it, and that not is not necessarily the person who should instigate it and actually has the political capital to make something happen.
Just to add some fuel to that fire, I know a lot of companies that a lot of change and trend, well, can't say it, but change initiatives, I should say, come from supply chain, or, you know, because it's just a dominant factor in the company. So like, it is interesting to see how technology always influences, it seems, because that's a common theme. But you're right, I think it's the political capital, the person, how they are in the company, how they culturally are, how they're viewed. Usually that's just the leader that happens to drive it. So.
And I think one of the other areas that has tremendous influence, good or bad, is always finance, because they
always,
you know, you talk about if you're going to change the way we're going to work, then how are we going to fund projects? And we say, oh, there are no more projects. Oh my gosh, they freak out. And so there's a lot of issues around that.
I think we're going to get on this later, but that'd be the revolution part instead of maybe the evolutionary bit.
Yeah.
I love that. Here's a, as a leader, I would like to understand how best I can influence my organization to change the way we do things so that I can support the revolution.
Yeah.
Let's stick with that. We can always make it better. I want to see if we can begin to unpack it theme by theme. Maybe we'll do a 10-minute time box and lean coffee, thumbs up at the end. The first theme that came up was, well, what the heck do we mean by centralized and decentralized? Richard, do you want to walk us through that theme, how it emerged for you?
Yeah, my initial thinking when I was contemplating those two terms was just based on my experience, what I've traditionally seen. So the centralized view for me that I've seen is it's, again, there's some technology leader most likely instigating this change initiative. And that means that, you know, whoever that person's sphere of influence is, wherever they are in the organization, that, you know, things are going to start happening in that area. And there's a whole slew of consequences, good and bad, that may come out of that. I've also seen versions of this being instigated by a PMO, right? So a program or a project management office decides, you know, we've heard about this agile thing and we need to start controlling it, right? We need to make sure that everything is being, quote, implemented the way we need to. So as I first started pondering the topic, that was my own, questions that I was asking of what does it really mean? And what are some examples of taking a decentralized approach versus a centralized approach? And very quickly, and I'd like to hear everybody else's thoughts, when I was thinking from a decentralized perspective, what came to mind first was what I typically see is what we might just call kind of organic grassroots uprisings in an organization. So teams and individuals just start doing things that make sense and start, you know, bringing some new way of working into their team. And next thing you know, you see all of this little grassroots stuff happening and all of this energy starting to be created. And it wasn't a top down, it wasn't sanctioned, but it's really got a life of its own. And then, you know, how does the organization respond to that? But that's where my brain went initially.
So when you say the grassroots part, that immediately speaks to me because I've never been part of a formal capital T transformation, but it just seems to make more sense because the way that I see that is that it would be
understanding the individual context. So I'm guessing this is a larger organization. You would understand individual team context while trying to keep in mind that whole system view. So that's kind of the trap in it is, yes, you're thinking about very specific team context about people and personalities and the way that they work. But the trap to not fall into would be that kind of the local approach and not getting to the whole.
It almost makes me think of the phrase like highly aligned and loosely coupled in a way, because we're basically trying to gain the benefits of both at the same time, but usually one is dominant to get success. You either have high decentralization, so it kind of catches on and has success and it kind of gets its footing or whatever you want to call it. It kind of spreads and permeates that way. But if you don't have some way of centralizing it also, you don't have that highly aligned understanding where people just starts to become more chaotic and it grows. And then you just basically have a bunch of silos and fiefdoms of things that exist. And you know, so you kind of have to have both in some way. And one usually does dominate to have the other one thrive. It's almost like a flywheel effect. One feeds the other and it kind of has to have this zen. And that's where the coaching and other things come into play. And this is why I said like removing friction earlier. I mean, that's basically what this is you want that thing to turn and be successful at the same time. But I think if I had to really pick on one though, that I feel like is necessary, but always goes wrong, it's centralizing. But decentralizing is always the one that succeeds and has the most success, but then also is the one that quickly fails the most. Like, so it's just funny to see them both in tandem where one really can't exist without the other, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, John. I think that I've been involved in lots of the grassroots movements, but I think there has to come a point where, okay, this is working in several silos across the organization. And that is almost a trap, is that there has to be a point when it has to transition to centralize in order to scale. Otherwise, it does just remain this random scattering of practices where you've got teams working in different ways.
As you were going through the definitions, it occurred to me just a little bit differently, which I find kind of interesting. When I heard decentralized, I wasn't thinking grassroots. I was thinking more autonomy with alignment. So there's local control, but driven or inspired by a more cohesive effort. And when I heard centralized, you know, maybe some PTSD from other experiences, that brought for me images of very highly structured, almost leaning towards imposed, uniform type of approach. So it's interestingly, those were the thoughts that were occurring to me as I heard these words and listening. Yeah, Jonathan and Mark, what you're saying really resonated for me, because what seems like the most logical thing and where I've seen good results is when there's a cohesive direction and the ability to harness the power of the larger organization, yet giving, you know, kind of being agile about our agile, empowering individual areas to work within the alignment and the guardrails, if you will. So, as the organization gets more complex and the interactions of the people and the systems get more complex, then it gets even more challenging.
Yeah, Mike, I had the same thoughts in my head, right? And so when I use the term grassroots, two things followed that thought for me. Is number one is just to use kind of the bad metaphor of then a grass fire, right? The accelerant to really get change happening, because those are often unburdened, right? There are less constraints because, again, leadership may not even know about it yet. The PMO hasn't caught on yet. So teams are free to experiment and do things, and maybe their managers create a nice bubble for them. And so there's a natural accelerant to see things start to change and start to grow organically. What I've also seen, though, is that also might imply that there's a lack of core leadership. And so there's a ceiling potentially on how much growth they can really get. The other flip side of it, which is why I like having this conversation of a pros versus cons, because there are two sides of the coin for each of these. I think we've all probably seen our share of the bad kind of centralized approach, but I've also seen the good side of it. I've seen very well executed centralized approaches because it gets that alignment. It helps provide that clarity, that compelling purpose. And the people at the team level then have that assurity, that confidence that, all right, we've got that leadership support. Now we can really do these things. And I think that's an important aspect as well. And there's both getting that alignment, and there's also making sure that the things that are happening at the team level on the ground are coherent, meaning they make sense. So Mark's team might be doing very different things than my team, but they're coherent in the sense that we're all kind of working toward the same, you know, high level goal.
I'm going to throw a phrase out there. I'm just curious real quick. Is it, if I had to summarize a little bit of what you just said, would centralize almost sustain the growth and decentralize drive the growth? That's my two cents.
There you go, being smart. I don't know. Well, nobody's going to be able to see everyone's looks. But the faces just went like,
that does resonate.
Yeah. Real quick. As Richard was talking, something resonated for me. And that is that the grassroots, you know, the grass fire burning, eventually you run into systemic impediments or things that hold you back, that you need the larger organization and maybe more of the centralized to help solve. That's been a consistent experience for me.
Trying to add on to two of those things there. I think that Richard, you were talking about the necessity of leadership in that. I think it both makes it okay to change the way you're working, but I think that can also, it needs to serve two purposes. And the second one being to say, it's not okay to continue working the way you're working, because I think there are, you know, people don't like change, and many people will fight very hard just for the sake of not changing, even though they don't understand. And then, heck, I lost the train of thought on the second one. Oh, it was the other one regarding organizations like the PMO and the idea of flying under the radar of the PMO, because I think in too many cases, the PMO serves a purpose that can be similar to the way bad HR departments act, which is they become the department of no and the protector of the status quo. And they might actually be the ones to come in and put that brush fire out.
Yeah. So that's a good segue, I think, to theme two, cultural implications, right? You've got resistance to change, status quo, current identity. And so help us unpack that one a bit, Richard, and then we'll dive in and discuss cultural implications of centralized versus decentralized.
Yeah, so I always like to pull up that Drucker phrase whenever I get a chance of strategy, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And then I like to say, well, if that's the case, then, you know, agile transformations are a virtual smorgasbord because they are fraught with cultural challenges. They're fraught with organizational challenges, political challenges, structural challenges. I think, you know, as a coach, I've long since kind of built into my consciousness and to, I guess, my way of trying to coach others is, you know, we need to make sure that we understand, we have cultural awareness, right? So we understand who we are and where we are as an organization, as a team, today. And we need to have a sense on where we think we need to go in the future. And I, for one, I'm curious about everybody else's experience here. You know, I've learned over the years that, you know, looking at bringing change about, whether it's a so-called agile transformation or something else, bringing change into an organization and having it succeed and be sustainable and truly yield value, I mean, it's absolutely based on that cultural awareness and then being able to make sure we're doing the right thing given what we understand of our culture. And so I think the quote cultural implications of this are deep and wide. And I like to make sure that leadership understands how that affects the ability to succeed and the ability to actually see sustainable change.
There's another podcast buried in here. One of our coaches, Dr. Steve Martin, had his PhD dissertation on the impact of culture at the beginning of a transformation and the likely probability of success. We can argue what success means, but he did some amazing research, and we'll have him on a show sometime that unpacks that, right? Different parameters, different aspects of the culture, they create either a fertile field or a toxic concrete covered waste dump that things will never grow on. So open discussion, cultural implications on both approaches.
I'll start off listening to this theme. The first thought that jumped into my mind was how your culture is really is something that evolves over time. Sometimes I hear it defined as culture is the way we do things around here. And then it's the values and the beliefs and the principles that then drive the practices. So the thought that comes to mind for me is at the outset of this adventure, understanding the culture that's in place today is absolutely essential, because if we don't, we will surely make our lives harder, maybe even shoot the whole thing in the foot. I don't know if you all have had this experience, but people say, we want to change the culture. And, there's successory posters and rah-rahs and town halls. And those can be helpful, provided that the actions correlate to the words. And so I think by being aware of culture that exists, and then deliberately in concert with the leadership, moving the culture towards the desired direction bit by bit through actions. A favorite example I give is people will care about what their boss asks them about. So the people who are in leadership positions, what they pay attention to, what they devote their energy, their time, their words to, then influences the way people think and what those people believe and value, which then starts to slowly shift the culture. So that's kind of how it occurs to me.
I would tend to agree with you on that, Mike, especially that first point that you made on understanding the culture. And I feel like that's the biggest part of our job, is really in facilitating this change, is we need to understand where we've landed. And then by helping teams get to where they're trying to go, there's a big element of clarification that needs to be made. So I don't know if in some cases it could be communicating the outcomes, but when the outcomes aren't necessarily clear. So when we do have people coming to say, we want to be more agile, trying to clarify those outcomes. And once there are signs of success, communicating that and saying, this is what success looks like. So we know we're going in the right direction when we're getting something like this. So there's that bit of understanding, but also communicating what it's going to look like when it's going well, without necessarily so taking the existing culture and not completely breaking it down, because there's going to be an element of resistance if we're trying to change the culture just because we want this transformation. That's not going to make sense, and it won't make sense to the people. So it's taking what we have and trying to use that to get to where we're trying to go to.
Keep the good that's there and then add to it is kind of what it sounds like you're saying, Claudia.
I was going to put a little bit of a different spin on this, which is boiling the ocean possibly, but it's important, I guess, to bring up, which is, I feel like a lot of people intermingle with culture sometimes, and I use this word loosely, but religion and the beliefs that people have. And usually they are intermingled. And I think it's important to just make them distinct. And what I mean by that is like culture is really just an encompassing body of knowledge that stays with people that evolves over time, though, year after year. And it's kind of like part of the knowledge and domain of what happened. But religion is usually a set of beliefs and values that usually are kind of like stick around for a while. And it's so it's like it kind of goes hand in hand a little bit. And the reason why I want to bring this up, though, is because it is interesting to see how people respond in a culture based off what they believe in and what their upbringings are. And that's why we want diversity and richness. And, you know, it makes everybody think uniquely and have your vast amount of knowledge when you have that approach. But it also makes it wildly complex to even understand what is the culture here, because it's all over the place. And that's intentional. That's intentional. You want it to be diverse, but you also inherently make your understanding of what is culture here very complex to understand. So when people say, well, how's the culture changing? I mean, good luck measuring that. It's going to be all over the place. And that intentionally companies are trying to do that because it makes sure you target and hit everybody's spot of why they even show up to work, right? Is it compensation? Is it career? Do you just want to have friends? Do you want to be included? Do you like the technology? Like, everybody shows up for a different reason. And I think that's where the cultural implications get really interesting on the centralized and decentralized. Because decentralized, you know, they're going to have uniqueness in what the teams want versus centralized on what the outcomes are. So that's my two cents on that.
I'm just going to guess and hear all of this stuff. But I think that culture has to be dealt with in a very intentional way. You can't hope that, I mean, communicating it is great. But I was once in this organization where the culture was drilled into us every single day, and we were expected to behave in a certain way. And it got to the point where when I meet somebody else who has that same experience, I know exactly what to expect from them. But it wasn't by accident. And so I think that's and you actually, that religion comment, is some people call what I was in a cult, but it's not a cult.
Again, I love talking about culture. There's so much to unpack. Real quickly, so the idea of beliefs is absolutely, in my view, embedded into this, right? So if in an organizational context and in a change initiative context, right, we're not going to get people to change their way of working just by telling them to or by creating clever marketing posters. What we're going to be doing is creating new experiences for people that then start to change their belief systems, which open up new possibilities. And yes, this can happen. And yes, I can, I truly am empowered, those sorts of things. So that's how I think about the belief aspect of it is you can't explicitly change culture. You can't explicitly change people's beliefs, but we can create experiences that then help create that change going forward. Back to the relevance of this topic for me is that when I'm looking at the question of should we decentralize, should we centralize, and what are the pros and cons, is again, understanding what is our cultural kind of profile, what's our norm today. So for example, I lean on the competing values framework a lot, if anybody's used that before, but one of the dimensions, just to keep it simple, one of the dimensions of the competing values framework is looking at the need for stability and control, the lower part of the quadrant, versus the need for flexibility and discretion, which is the upper part of the quadrant. And the lower part of the quadrant includes, you know, what we would call traditional hierarchical command and control cultures. And if that's where we are today, well, let's just own it, let's embrace it, and let's then make decisions that fit. Right. So maybe if that's our orientation, is that we need, as an organization, we need stability and control. Well, then having some centralization and dealing with that stability and control probably makes sense so that we can move forward and not get kind of stuck in and conflicted ourselves. If our culture today is oriented around flexibility and discretion, which is like a clan culture or an adhocracy, then maybe decentralizing will make sense because, again, it fits to our culture today. And then as we continue to progress through the change, then, you know, these things are going to change as well, and we need to be able to adapt as we go.
I love that. So we hit the 10-minute time box. Let's get a Roman vote going. Yes, audience that is listening, you can't see what we're doing. Keep going or move, kill the topic. We've got go. All right, it says theme 3, organizational structure implications. Does the current org structure enable or impede free-flowing information and learning? Let's talk about implications. Let's unpack this one some more, Richard. How does it fit in with the theme of centralized and decentralized?
Very close relationship to the culture topic, I believe. But again, as I approach this part of the question, you know, I'm thinking, how rigid is the hierarchy? Is my ability to kind of go have a conversation up the food chain or across the organization, is that just naturally free-flowing? Or, you know, am I unintentionally or intentionally siloed by the hierarchy? My mind also jumps to the question of scale, right? So we know that as we're scaling, you know, hierarchy is going to exist, but how do we kind of permeate through that hierarchy and see the networks of how value actually gets delivered and who's talking to who and who do I need to go to get this knowledge? And so that's complicated, if not a complex topic for me when I'm looking at an organization. And again, I sometimes feel like it's just a default reflex to say, we have a hierarchy, therefore this is how things are going to be run and managed. And the reality for me that I see is that, again, just, you know, information tends to flow more, you know, serpentine through an organization, not based on the hierarchy. And I think that, I don't know the answer to this one, but I definitely think that has a particular implication when we're pondering this question of decentralizing or centralizing, or how do we distribute, you know, the change that we're trying to bring about.
I find it a little bit difficult to decouple org structure from culture, because I think that frequently has, there's such a close tie there. Because if you've got a culture that's high, really, really big on command and control, then people are going to be afraid to go out of their boxes and try new things. They're going to go in permission seeking mode, and I think that would tend to inhibit innovation around doing things like this.
Plus one to what Mark said. In my mind, I really struggle to think of them separately because of the intertwining. A thought that came to mind, though, thinking about this theme, is that the organization structure sometimes influences communication and how a change would be absorbed or taken on board, in that when it comes back to language. So group that I identify as part of, if we're more decentralized, so more kind of independent units that don't have quite as heavy a matrix, in my experience, there's a tendency to be more collaborative that way and then be more open to the type of change that we're talking about here. And more heavily matrixed, more a stronger hierarchy structure of that organization may lend itself more towards centralized, where you have to or are better served to work through the structure and the hierarchy to get change flowing.
I'm curious, in all of our travels, has there ever been an org structure that developed organically and not decentralized? I think sociocracy as an alternative. At scale, at enterprise, has every org structure been a centralized imposition? And so it begs the question, if it 9 out of 10 times it is, can you change it in any other way than through a centralized approach without revolution?
So I can speak to that one. I am currently on a contract with a team, so probably not the scale of this, not the same scale as these types of organizational shifts. But there has been a lot of empowerment and communication of empowerment and letting teams know you can try this, you can do this, you are free to experiment. Just to kind of give that impetus to let some sort of other organization emerge. So it's really slow coming, but I think people are starting to understand it. They're starting to get the message. But then it comes back to what Richard was saying earlier. It really depends on what kind of hierarchical relationships you have. Is the organization that's in place, is it siloed? Do we already have people that are working together? And are they thinking product or value delivery, or are they just thinking, okay, I've got to get my part of the work done? So I think it kind of took us all over the place, but yeah, it just made me think about that. It is possible. It just takes a lot more time to have that organic change emerge.
So Andy, this one's tricky for me because to answer your question, have I ever seen it happen that it's non-centralized? No. I've ever seen a hierarchy where they started to disseminate that more in a holacracy way or even, no. Do I see that ever changing? No. But do I have seen people change that approach? Yes. And what I mean by that is when you see a true leader that actually represents themselves as a talent builder and people manager that puts that at their forefront in large organizations, yes, the hierarchy is still there, but it's a drastically different culture when a leader approaches it that way. So there's not all hope is lost because centralization and hierarchies are going to stick. But I do think the people's mindset and approach to it can still inform how we view the operations, if you will, or I don't know what the right word is, but how they fulfill their value as a leader. And that's just my two cents. So,
I mean, part of the question that I want to explore here also is what about the need to, quote, change an existing structure or introduce something new? So there's one thing to say, hey, we're going to flatten it, go to a holacracy approach. But an interesting idea that I've seen it happen, and I'm not sure that maybe I made up a story after the fact to glamorize it. But again, if we go back to that original definition in the story of as a technology leader, this is what I want. So, and I've seen that play out where these so-called transformations start in IT, and therefore they kind of get siloed to IT. And I'm curious and we've talked about, is a PMO a good thing or a bad thing? But what if, as we're seeing that siloing happening, because it started in this part of the organization, it seems to be kind of stuck there. If we created a new structure into the organization, that's sole purpose was to break through the hierarchy, to start to disseminate change across the hierarchy. That still is a form of a structure, but it's like an anti-structure. And I would like to say that I've seen more examples of that, but I've really only seen one or two. And again, maybe I've kind of glamorized them after the fact. But I'm curious, has anybody seen anything like that or see the potential for something to still respect the hierarchy, but cut through it?
My quick comment I'll say to that is I haven't seen it really like change drastically. I guess the comment I'll make is I have seen some companies, and even the one I'm at is sort of doing this, where instead of using the hierarchy as a direction of where leadership's coming from and how the flow of information is happening, it's more of a reference for where you are as a career growth opportunity and just structure perspective. But they actually, whenever they say like, well, what's the structure of the company? They actually reference the operating model, not the hierarchy model. So that's one way to kind of sneak around it. But I don't know if it is really ringing the bell of what you're saying. So.
Yeah, I've seen it sort of once and not at scale, but it was a shift to where the people who were managers became, I don't know if you've ever been in something where they formed a guild or a center of excellence, something like that, where we had a quality manager and the quality manager's job was to teach people how to be better at testing. And so they worked with testers and sometimes with developers as well. But they weren't setting direction in terms of what was going on, other than like in that case, from an architectural standpoint, what tools are going to be used, what kind of, you know, following the what's happening in the industry, things like that. So there was no setting of direction by those people in terms of what work the people on their team were doing. Their teams were setting that direction.
I worked with one organization that made a very intense effort towards this. And there was essentially revolt from within by folks who were in management type roles, because they were told, well, you know, you don't really have much of a role anymore. You're a people manager, and that's it. And so the antibodies within the organ revolted against the foreign invader, so to speak, because they were people lost a lot of influence and prestige. So it snapped back in less than 2 years.
Yeah, that model keeps reemerging. There's a book on my shelf that I still yet to get through, but it talks about that. It came out late 2018, but it talks about viruses and changing the DNA of the host. It's no longer the top story or metaphor in my arsenal, given current situations. But you described it, right? You're trying to change structure, culture, ways of working, which is so entrenched in the, quote, DNA of the organization as an organism, that either you affect real change, like a virus does in DNA, or the antibodies kick you out. Richard, do you think we can quickly do a flyby of theme four, the feedback loops that are so precious and valuable?
Sure.
Before we wrap?
Yeah, so the theme four, we were thinking about just applying what we do to help kind of answer the question and just deal with the reality of change, of, you know, we need to observe and we need to use those observations to learn, again, following OODA loop or plan, do, check, act type approach. So, you know, as I was thinking about the topic and just the simple reality of, we may not know, right? So knowing where to start and which approach to take brings some uncertainty with it. So we do, and then we inspect and adapt, and we observe how it's working within the organization. And we, you know, hopefully do the right thing based on what those observations are. And, you know, what I'm hearing, which was, again, already in my head, but what I'm hearing resoundingly from this great panel is, right, if we're going back to the base question, then, quote, the answer is both, right? Yeah, we need to apply both a centralized and a decentralized approach where it makes sense, and we need to be pragmatic about how we go about that. So, you know, maybe at the team level, right, we want to encourage some as much decentralization as possible. You know, at the overall org level, having some central vision and some compelling purpose and maybe even a guiding coalition makes sense, so that everybody understands, you know, we're all kind of working toward the same goal. And then in the middle, the system layer, you know, is probably a mix of things because it's quite dynamic in that space. And then I also can't help thinking about just the sheer paradox that of what we face as coaches, trying to help an organization change while they're just trying to keep their head above water, while they're just trying to deliver and meet the demand that they have. And that's messy. And so it's almost likely not one way or the other in my mind.
Yeah, I have to, can't argue with anything there. My experience has been that a blend of centralized and decentralized is essential to success. One or the other, is out of balance, and the system gets out of balance, and then some constraint inevitably stops progress, or worse, sets you back. And you mentioned the OODA loops. That model really seems very helpful in my experiences, because it requires you to observe and orient. So kind of sense the system, if you will, the human system, you know, going back to our earlier point about culture and understanding the culture and using that to guide actions and to balance the centralized, where centralization makes sense and decentralization. It brings to mind the term autonomy with alignment. So having the a larger picture and the direction and a shared outcome that the organization aligns to, but then creating the conditions where in a more decentralized way, there's autonomy as you get closer to the work or even just in general. That's what I've seen have the best result.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that puts us at a great spot to wrap. I want to thank our esteemed panel of guests from both Agile Velocity and the Agile Uprising. Also, listening audience, if you enjoyed this episode, do a couple of things. Share it with a friend, a colleague, send it up, down, left, right, wherever you need to go. Give us a review, a rating on your platform. Wait a minute. I'm getting interrupted by one of our guests, the swear jar. Did we not swear? Did I forget to swear on this episode?
It wasn't actually about real swearing. We said we're going to avoid agile and transformation.
Oh, right.
How did we do? Did you keep score?
I did. I think Mike said one, but it was in reference to avoiding using the A word, the T word. We can throw in a few bad words, can't we?
Yes, we can.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Wouldn't be an agile podcast without one of us cussing. So anyway, yes, give us a rating, give us a review. Don't make it not safe for work, because that'll get us kicked off of iTunes and all those other platforms. If you'd like to join the discussion with us and maybe join in a future panel conversation to share your stories about centralized and decentralized cussing, come on over to the Discord server. There's a link on agileuprising.com. And finally, support, like $5 a month. It's not that much. Well, we'll keep us out of jail, cover our hosting and production costs. See the show notes or agileuprising.com for more details how to become a patron. Until next time, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing out.